Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope. I'm your host, Rory Hearn, and I'm joined today on Reboot Republic to discuss the proposal that has been put forward to hold a referendum to insert a right to housing in our constitution. I'm joined by fellow members of Home for Good campaign, Wayne Stanley from the Simon Communities and chairperson for Home for Good, and Rebecca Keating, managing solicitor for the Mercy Law Centre. Just to remind listeners and tell you, we are Reboot Republic, an independent media. All these podcasts cost to produce and host. And if you enjoy listening and want to help us continue to bring voices and analysis from the front line, experts and change makers that we're doing, become a patron. Sign up to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And one of our listeners sent a lovely tweet today who said, one of the best things about Reboot Pod is how Rory Hearn can cut through the bullshit, take apart terrible policy, offer genuine workable alternatives, and yet never be personal in his assessment. That's from DJ Brannock. So if you want to get your tweet read out, please do another slavish fawning tweet and I'll read it out. So, but it does show there is people out there enjoying this. I know that there's thousands of people downloading these podcasts. We know you're getting a lot from them. So are we. Please become a patron and sign up. Now, on to our topic of today, the right to housing. And I think today was a very, very significant day. We're recording this on Tuesday, the 3rd of November. In front of the Oireachtas committee, both Wayne and Rebecca presented the case set out by Home for Good for inserting a right to housing in the constitution and holding a referendum. And I think from my own perspective, this is a campaign that I've been involved in for over 3 years and been advocating it for much longer. But I actually look back through my emails earlier today, and the first meeting I came across, the first meeting to set up this campaign for a right to housing, was almost exactly 3 years ago. And it was with Colette Kelleher, the senator, then senator, myself, Niamh Randall from the Simon Communities, Connor Casey from the Mercy Law Centre, Karen McLaughlin from SIPTU, and Anne Fitzgerald. Huge work has gone in since then, and now the Home for Good campaign includes, along with those, Threshold and Focus Ireland, while also there's many others supportive of the idea of the right to housing in a referendum, such as Peter McVerry, Force of Trade Union, SIPTU, ICTU, and the Raise the Roof campaign. It was very significant today that the wording that our legal subgroup has worked on was put into the Oireachtas record. And that proposes to insert a new Article 43 on housing into the Constitution, which would state that the state recognises and shall vindicate the right of all persons to have access to adequate housing, and the state shall, through legislative and other measures, provide for the realisation of this right within its available resources. Now, listeners will be familiar that I have made this case for a right to housing, and I think what is very clear is that the homelessness and housing crisis has gone on for far too long. And we know that one child being homeless is one too many, that tens of thousands have experienced the trauma of homelessness is a societal failure. And we have to mark an endpoint and an act to end homelessness and the wider housing crisis, which affects renters, young adults stuck at home, the elderly, those with disabilities, travellers, and other marginalised groups. And I think that we need a conversation about home. We need a conversation that puts housing central to our government, that makes it responsible. And that is really what this constitutional change is about. It's about prioritising the responsibility of the state, of government, to ensure everybody has access to an affordable, secure home, and marking an endpoint to our crisis. I think what was important from today was that there was representatives from the opposition parties and two government parties spoke very strongly in favour of the right to housing in the referendum. The challenge, of course, now is how we get it progressed. And interestingly, just last Friday in the Shannon debate, the Minister for Housing explicitly said that the Constitution was a barrier to extending tenant protections for 6 months, which was called on when he said that one of the reasons I can't go with 6 months is because I must be proportionate yet operate legally within the Constitution. So very clearly, the Constitution protections for the right to private property are a barrier to progressing protections such as tenant protections. So to take in my guests now, firstly, maybe go to you, Wayne, and then to Rebecca. Wayne, firstly, the most important question I think people would ask, and really this at the heart of it, what would getting a right to housing in the Constitution achieve practically?
Yeah, I think that really cuts to the heart of it, doesn't it? It achieves a number of things. There are more kind of esoteric thing it achieves, which is kind of what kind of country do we want to live in? What kind of balance do we want in our constitution that reflects the kind of republic we are? there's also very practical things, and you've actually touched on them there when you talked about the eviction question that we've been campaigning quite strongly on as the Simon community and
yeah.
So have Threshold and Focus Ireland and Mercy Law, and we wanted a greater level of protection for people during the COVID crisis, particularly because we know homelessness puts people at increased risk when they're in COVID, during the time of COVID. And that hasn't been possible, in part because of advices that the government has been getting from the Attorney General in relation to the how the protection of private property impacts on policy in that area. I think more broadly during the COVID crisis, what has been really, I suppose, eye-opening, which is something that we've known for a long time, as you say, this campaign has been running for some time, is that during the homeless and housing crisis, which has been named as such by the first time by a government minister back in 2014, when John O'Sullivan was Minister for Housing and described the family homelessness crisis as a crisis. It's subsequently been said in the Dáil a number of times it was a crisis, and in motions carried by the Dáil, by the majority of the Dáil, was named as a crisis and indeed an emergency. What has been interesting is over the last while, some of the things that we would have campaigned for, we were told weren't constitutional, became constitutional, or the possibility for them to happen arose in the context of the COVID crisis, the existential health crisis that we're experiencing at the moment. And it seems that that's now, that set actually the benchmark for what the level of crisis we have to be at for us to override property rights in any kind of substantive way. And that is too high of a barrier. We've never been able to get ahead of the housing crisis because we've never been able to take radical policies. The rights and wrongs of those policies can be discussed. I mean, some of the things I might advocate for, other people would argue it's too much interference with the market and you'd scare landlords off, and that isn't what we want to do either. But we can't even have those discussions because the sense that it will infringe on the constitutional right to private property shuts down the discussion. So that has fettered the right of the Oireachtas to actually talk through what are the best policies. Into the longer term, what we want to get to is we want to see the examples where we've seen places like Finland, where they do have a constitutional right, which has moved to a process of getting very low levels of homelessness. Those examples, you have to be careful with them because they're all very different in context, and not every place that has either a legislated or constitutional right has dealt with homelessness. But what they do is they do change the discussion. And in terms of our colleagues in France that I've spoken to, when they brought in a right to housing there, locally, NGOs that work on the ground found that the conversations that they started to have with their local authorities, with the municipalities there, changed once the legislation changed, because the way they prioritize housing changed. And when they start seeing it as a right, as something that is fundamental to almost fundamental citizenship, all of a sudden the way you engage with the topic of providing that resource and allowing people, making issues around affordability and the appropriateness of housing changes in the context of us changing the law and us changing the constitution. So I think where we get in the long term with this, I think, is we get to a much more stable housing system, which is ultimately where we want to go.
Yeah, I think that's a really, I think, you know, accurate and important point, that it is about, you know, what is it ultimately trying to achieve? It's trying to achieve a housing system where everybody has access to affordable, secure home, and that's actually much better for, you know, the economy. It's much better for society. And so within this, you know, the constitutional protection is not just about protecting a right, but it's actually about setting out what is the purpose of housing policy, what is the purpose of your housing system, and a vision for that. Thanks, Wayne. Rebecca Keating, Managing Solicitor with the Mercy Law Centre, you've produced two reports, and of course yourself and Connor and others have been involved in this campaign and advocating around this for a number of years. What in your, I suppose, to your sense and analysis, what would be that kind of practical achievement of getting the right to housing, putting it in the constitution? Why should we go to the effort to do this?
Well, I think Wayne has set it out well in terms of the overarching change that it could bring about. And I suppose it is a cultural and political shift that we want to see. We've seen how successive housing legislation has been essentially blocked and hasn't even been discussed on the floor of the Dáil because it has been purportedly unconstitutional. And I suppose by rebalancing the strong property rights provisions in Article 43, we can then enable more progressive policies to come through. In terms of our practice, I mean, the example I gave today at the committee was just from my own day-to-day practice in terms of advocating on behalf of people who are experiencing homelessness. And you have in the legal framework on homelessness a discretionary provision so that the local authorities don't have to provide homeless accommodation. They just may provide it if they think that person, in their opinion, is homeless. And that is a barrier to our advocacy on behalf of those vulnerable people successively. But if the local authority is then obliged to use those powers in a manner that's compatible with the Constitution, and that Constitution does have a protection of adequate housing, that puts that kind of a case in a different place altogether. So just a kind of example from our casework in terms of how it could have practical effect. And then I gave an example as well from Finland, which could be carried over to Ireland potentially, where there was legislation being brought in relation to subsidising providers of social housing, and whether those social housing providers could then sell the property stock that they had. And it was found that that would be unconstitutional on the basis that there was a provision requiring provision of adequate housing. So there's a whole different range of ways that it would have potential impact.
And I think that's really important, because it was asked in the committee today in terms of that, like, where are other countries that, you know, this has had a demonstrable, you know, practical impact. And I think both of you, you know, you've named France and Finland there as examples of this. So this can have a really big change. And I think there is, you know, the issue around, you know, homelessness, for example, if we talk about first and then maybe go on to talk about, you know, the wider sort of how this would affect, for example, generation rent, renters, those who want access to affordable housing. And in terms of homelessness first, Rebecca, you know, how could this be used? Because I think it was Rebecca Moynihan asked the question in the committee today in terms of what legislation would go along with this, or what legislation are we proposing to go along with it? And, you know, how could this sort of help government or to basically end the homelessness crisis, or end not just the crisis, but end homelessness?
Well, I mean, overall, there has to be an impetus in terms of housing supply and progressive measures to be able to properly provide housing that meets the needs of a whole range of people in the state. And I suppose this is to open up that space so that those progressive measures can be discussed and then can be implemented. In relation to homelessness, I suppose the sharp end of it is people who can't access homeless accommodation, or the discretion and the latitude afforded to local authorities. And Wayne mentioned and spoke to the impact in France of the Dalo Amendment. I think it was 2007 it was brought in, and that there was a whole refocusing of and new communication really between NGOs advocating on behalf of people and advocacy groups with local authorities to try and kind of in a meaningful way meet people's housing needs. So I think there is a cultural shift that this can bring about without there being sort of, you know, legal cases. This isn't about giving grounds for kind of legal cases. It's about opening up the space so that there can be solutions brought on, and that everybody's invested in that, because we have this underlying and enduring protection that's in place.
But in terms of that, you know, practical change, you know, at local authorities, for example, do you think like the purpose of putting in a constitutional protection would be to give the impetus to government, to give the responsibility to government, to then ensure that local authorities, for example, have an obligation to address homelessness, rather than, you know, be it just through setting out plans and not actually having the obligation to ensure, you know, people aren't homeless?
I mean, from a kind of practitioner's perspective, you know, working with people who are trying to access homeless accommodation, you know, the way that we have to bring cases is just relying on sort of peripheral rights, because we can't rely on something as firm as a right to housing. So we're relying on family rights, on private life entitlements, rights to bodily integrity. But if you're faced with a situation where, we're advocating those cases, but you have this firmer protection of the Constitution, it does give you, greater legal arguments and greater legal scope to be arguing that people should be indeed provided with adequate housing to a standard that meets their needs. So just in terms of the kind of net cases that we would come across. I mean, I think in terms of legislation that would accompany this, there's a whole swathe of legislation that would come in. One thing that we would like to see at Mercy Law is a recasting of the 1988 Homeless Act, so the Housing Act that deals with homelessness, so that it then did expressly, oblige local authorities to provide homeless accommodation, together with other elements such as time limits on the period people can spend in homeless accommodation and a best interest of the child. So we would like to see that kind of accompanying legislation on the homeless side. And then, of course, security of tenure and protection against evictions. There'll be much greater scope. And that was something that Rosemary from Focus Ireland focused on today in terms of the debates on the recent legislation that's come in both in August and then more recently in relation to limitations on evictions. But they're very much, limitations. The legislation itself is very complex. It's really quite impenetrable for me as a lawyer and my colleague lawyers when we looked at it. And then you compare that with the absolute halt on evictions that happened during the actual emergency period back between March and June. So, there would be greater scope to be providing greater security of tenure and to be protecting insecure renters.
And just on that, the maybe a specific question, why does it, like, putting it in as a balancing right within Article 43 rather than, we'll say, putting it, maybe you could explain a little bit that the reasoning for where we've put it in the Constitution?
Yeah, I think that's a good point and a good question to address. And it did come up in the committee discussion today, and we really welcome that discussion because Mercy Law chairs the legal subgroup of Home for Good, and we've given the positioning and the formulation of this wording quite some thought. And we made a recommendation that it be a standalone article and a standalone right. And the reason for that is that Article 43, as we know, protects private property rights, and it says that you can interfere with those, the state can interfere with those in the interests of the common good. But you're doing an internal balancing exercise there, and the case law is at best inconsistent in relation to what circumstances the common good may justify an interference. And our view would be that you need to have a standalone separate right, which can then be balanced against the property property protections, because otherwise your starting point is always going to be from the private interest, the property owner's rights, and then balancing against the common good. But here you have just two competing rights, and in terms of how that would be approached legally, it would mean that greater weight would be placed on the competing right rather than just the common good within the Article 43.
Great. Now that makes sense. That explains that well. Thanks, Rebecca. Wayne, in terms of homelessness, how do you see getting this right in the Constitution addressing homelessness or providing a greater impetus to it? Because clearly, the Simon Communities and Focus Ireland, have really put a lot of effort behind the campaign, which is great, and, are facilitating and leading within it. And obviously homelessness is going to be a key debate within it. It's going to be a key question within the referendum. Like, how will this help reduce and end homelessness?
Yeah, we should also give a shout out to our colleagues in Respond and Threshold, who are also
absolutely
part of the coalition make a huge contribution. Unfortunately, the committee room isn't big enough to fit everybody in it, so that's why myself and Rebecca were.
I absolutely no. They understand that as well, and I named them at the start, and there's no one. There'll be no one feeling put out from this.
Yeah. No. But it's good to acknowledge their
absolutely. It is
contribution definitely. As well. In terms of homelessness, so one of the things that it'll do is, in terms of the long term, is the answer to the homelessness is a home, and we believe that this will create a better housing system. And put an impetus behind creating a better housing system, which will see less homelessness. That's the broad vision into the future. The immediate sort of things it will do, I think Rebecca raises the 1988 Housing Act that brought in the definition of homelessness and the sort of the may clause in that that says it gives a huge amount of latitude to local authorities in the way that they engage with homelessness. So the potential in terms of creating a constitutional right to home, it completely shifts the conversation. around what our rights and what our duties are in terms of that. It's important to say this isn't about everybody getting a free home, which is one of the kind of more uninformed accusations that's thrown out there. What it is yeah. about is ensuring that we have as a duty a respect for the inviability of the home, inviability of people's need for housing. And I think that changes the conversation around homelessness. What it also does is, and it's back to something we mentioned earlier, nobody should be evicted into homelessness. And how do we create that? How do we create a system that says nobody should be evicted into homelessness? We need to be able to balance the huge damage that's done by somebody having to cross the threshold of a homeless services with the right of somebody to their private property. And how do you create that balance when the balance is only on the side of property rights? Because, you know, the individuals, if we balance that against the individual's right of not having to cross the threshold of a homeless service, I think that's really powerful. And I think, again, it changes the conversation, but also changes the sort of laws you can bring in. The rights and wrongs of those laws need to be discussed and need to be thought through. You have to think about unintended consequences, but that's the job of the bureaucrats. That's why we elect people. The constitution shouldn't be the barrier to having those conversations. So that's the really powerful change that I think happens immediately.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you're right. And I think that, you know, idea that, you know, we need laws that can ensure nobody's evicted into homelessness. You're absolutely right about that. And the other thing I think is important to you know, that we do in this conversation and in the case for a constitutional change, that we make it that it is absolutely about, you know, ending homelessness and addressing homelessness. But it is also about, as you've said, you know, creating a housing system that ensures everybody has access to affordable, secure, decent standard housing, which is what's in the definition of adequate housing. And so therefore, this would make a real difference for Generation Rent, people stuck renting, people in terms of their insecurity of tenure, in terms of creating and putting pressure on and obligating government to create a housing system whereby there is greater provision of affordable housing and ensured that provision is there.
Rory. I mean, that's the other thing that in terms of talking to the legal subgroup as a non-lawyer, I think one of the things that had kind of escaped me and all my ruminations about this was actually even homeowners will have more protection.
Yeah.
More constitutional protection, because this clause isn't just about homelessness, isn't just about housing exclusion. It's also about the protections that we put on the home of your primary place of being where you raise your kids. And if you happen to be a homeowner, that protection of the constitution applies to you as well. It's some sort of well-meaning clause for the poor unfortunates. It's about us. It's about the people who live in this country and who are trying to raise their kids or not, who are, you know, who need a place to be a home. And it applies to right across the spectrum. I mean, I think one of the other people who stand to benefit from this, as we stretch out the policy implications of it, are also, yes, Generation Rent. There's also a huge swathe of people who in the modern world are earning quite good money. They are not the ones who are going to go on the social housing list, but they're also not able to afford to buy in our cities because of the cost of housing. And one of the things I said in the committee, when you look back at when the Constitution was formed in the 1930s, I mean, food was more expensive than rent. Mm. The housing situation could be quite dire in Ireland in the 1930s. I'm not painting it as any kind of nirvana, don't get me wrong. But it kind of the cost of housing wasn't a huge issue. In the modern world, and we know we've engaged with Leanne Farah, who talks about the financialization of property across the world and the impact that that's had on communities. We need a modern constitution for a modern world. And the protection of the home and the protection of housing, of the right to housing, is fundamental in the modern world to what we need as a society to move forward.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And it's something that, you know, I've written about in my book around that impact of financialization and the change in our housing system, that, you know, financial capital, vulture funds, real estate investors are playing an increasing role in our housing system. And the therefore, you know, it's legitimate to make the case that citizens, renters, homeowners need even greater protection when they're faced with the power of that finance and capital. And therefore, you know, we need this assertion now going forward. Rebecca, just on that, in terms of, you know, making the case, what would you sort of make the case for this in terms of speaking to that broader audiences of why this protection is important beyond addressing homelessness and those who are most affected by housing exclusion?
Well, I mean, I think the looking at the comparators of other countries, we can say that Ireland would just so not be an outlier in having this. You know, it is something that is a common feature of well-functioning democracies across Europe and across the world. So it's nothing. It's not a radical proposal that's being put out here, and it shouldn't be framed as such. And I suppose the wording as well. It is worth considering in terms of what this has the potential to do, and just to getting underneath it and understanding it and getting on board with it. I mean, the wording talks about access to adequate housing. And I suppose we haven't included other descriptions, you know, affordable housing, secure housing, safe housing. Mm-hmm. And that was discussed before the committee today in terms of, well, some people said that they didn't. One person said, I think that one of the deputies said that they didn't think adequate was a sort of type of word that you put into the constitution. There was a lot of questioning around what does adequate mean. I'll come back to that. But also there was question marks around how come you haven't put affordable in there, or safe or secure. And there are quite good reasons for that, in that constitution isn't the place to be putting in words that are quite difficult to define in terms of their legal sense. And adequate housing we put in there because adequate is actually very well explored, as you know, Rory, because I know that you've spoken on this and you've written on this in the International Covenant for Social and Economic Cultural Rights, which has a general comment which sets out seven characteristics of the right. And those characteristics are how you can measure what adequate housing is. And we got asked some kind of quite fact-specific questions before the committee in terms of, well, would this kind of housing situation be adequate housing? And actually, it's about touching against those characteristics. And the other thing about the wording is that we're talking about the state through legislative and other measures providing for the realization of this right. And we have included within its available resources, which is, you know, which also provoked some discussion before the committee, which was very welcome. You know, we really welcome the engagement on the wording. And I suppose that's bringing in the concept of progressive realization, which is also included in the UN comments on the right to housing. Some saw that as too much of a break, and some people thought, well, if you include that, then will it have the impact? But we think it strikes a good balance and fits with the overall kind of international legal structure.
Yeah, I think that's going to be important to explain to people what is meant by adequate housing. And for some people, I think, you know, they'll be going, oh, that's less than what we want. And, you know, I think I think it is really important to link it back to the international human rights framework, because I think it gives it a solid foundation then that this isn't something, you know, arbitrary. This is something that has been, and it's important to say, you know, that it's not just that the right to housing exists in 81 or so constitutions. It is set out in international human rights treaties that Ireland has already signed up to. And I know we've opted out of some of them, but, you know, in terms of, we have signed up to that International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. So this isn't something, you know, that Ireland has never engaged with before and other countries haven't. I think that's important to make that point as well. And just on, we'll say, the committee then today, what was your assessment? There was two, I actually thought the committee was really, really interesting. Two questions, I think, which, you know, some legal people will push further on it and we'll have a lot of debate. But I was going to ask you, we'll come on to, you know, what do you think are going to be the big challenges in campaigning around this? But the question of the separation of powers comes up for kind of, and it, there's no doubt it will come up in the campaign as well, that this is handing over, you know, the power in terms of housing policy to the courts, essentially, by putting it in the constitution and taking the power away from the Oireachtas. And of course, we have what Gerry White drew on, you know, we have the right to primary education in our constitution. And yes, you know, it is clearly government that decides on education policy. So that counters that. But in terms of, we'll say, Wayne, what would you say to that in terms of around that whole question of, you know, is this taking policy out of politics, out of the power of government to our elected representatives and handing it to the unelected kind of court judicial system?
No, And it's very clearly not. And that's why the importance of the reiterating that it's a balancing right. If anything, what we've seen, and there was a report commissioned by Kelly Kelleher when she was in the Shannon from the Oireachtas Library Service, where they produced a report over the last number of years. There have been 13 different bills that were proposed, both opposition and government, that were stymied because of the constitutional right to private property. And these were all things that we're working on towards dealing with the housing and homelessness crisis. And the benefits, the rights and wrongs of those policies couldn't be discussed because the immediate response was that it was the constitution was the barrier. So it's actually a balancing right. More broadly, it's for this amendment is being put to the people to decide what kind of constitution we want. So it's not handing, it's actually handing where we want to go on housing for the people to decide in a referendum. We're not writing a piece of legislation that is being put through and, you know, somehow stymies the Oireachtas in some way. It's a constitutional amendment. But the important thing is it's a balancing amendment that will allow us to have more in-depth and wide-ranging conversations around the policies that we need to do to get to the housing system that we need.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there, Nat, and that is a really good point to bring up. And, you know, it's part of why we've campaigned for this is that we do want the public to engage in this and debate. And we know we want a national, there's a need for a national conversation about how our housing system works and to understand it and how we treat it. And you're absolutely right. It's giving the power to people and public to decide on that. And that is a very powerful thing. Rebecca, what would be your kind of response to that in terms of the case that this, what does it mean for the separation of powers and that it's taking power away from the Oireachtas to decide on housing policy?
I think it's an important discussion to have because here we're looking to insert what is essentially an economic, social, cultural right into the constitution, not different, too different, quite analogous to free primary education. And, you know, it will potentially place positive obligations on the state to take action to vindicate that right. But I do think we have a very, you know, firmly constituted separation of powers within our legal system. And what the courts will be doing is to be leaving any policy responses, if there are infringements, firmly to the legislature to determine. So it was discussed before the committee today because it was an issue that was brought up, I think, just to air it and just to discuss it. But it won't be for the courts to tell the government how to spend its money. It'll be simply for the courts to assess whether a certain act or failure to act has infringed the new provision, and then that how they respond to that will be formulated by the legislature. So, in that sense, I don't think there are concerns, but it's an important discussion to have.
Great. That
actually came up during the Constitutional Convention, and for me was one of the really important points at the Constitutional Convention. Michael McDougall actually made that point quite strongly, and in responding to it, Mike Allen, our colleague from Focus Ireland at that committee, I think made the really important point that this is a particular thing that comes up in the particular legal framework that we have in Ireland, which is the common law framework, where court cases sort of develop law over time. And Mike made the point that most other common law countries don't have a constitution. And the reason for that is because most other common law countries are monarchies and the people are subjects, whereas people in Ireland are citizens and we get to decide the framework by which our laws are developed. And that's through our constitution. And I think that's quite a powerful sentiment for me in terms of people actually getting to insert into the constitution the importance of the home, because we can make the arguments around how important it is for, like, if you want your kids to go to school, if you want people to be able to vote, if you want them to be healthy, they need to have decent housing. So it's fundamental to everything it is to live in a republic. And that should be a decision that the people can make. And when we find where we now find ourselves is that the right to private property is having a demonstrable impact on our ability to provide that. And the other option is that we remove the right to private property, but we're not proposing that. We do see that there is value, and that's what we're saying is, let's just balance it. And what we're asking to do is that we ask the citizens of the state to engage with that.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And they, you know, the idea of how fundamental home is to our very existence, you know, is shown by what happens when people don't have a home. And you know, we're seeing the absolute destruction going on to the lives of thousands of children, their families and individuals in this country because of that. But not just those who are homeless, but those who are living in insecurity of tenure. And, you know, it's having impacts on, you know, household formation, on young people, you know, not seeing a future where they get their home, where they become independent. And so it's having huge mental health and mental health impacts on society as well. Mental health impacts, obviously devastating on trauma of those affected by homelessness, but it is having a mental health impact on those stuck in insecure renting, or as I said, those living at home, unable to become independent adults. So there is a much wider impact there. In terms of then the committee today, you know, from my watching it from the outside, and unfortunately only caught the first half of it, my sense was obviously it was very positive to see the two Fianna Fáil senators enthusiastically backing this, and the Green Party as well. And that obviously the other opposition, the opposition Sinn Féin and others, Labour Party, Social Democrats supporting this. And some, you were saying, Wayne, to me earlier, I missed it, some of the Fine Gael senators or members were also supportive as well, and some questioning. And you know, it's obviously very important we have those questions in debate. But it's broadly, you could say that there's a cross-party consensus around from the committee, the Housing Committee today, in progressing this now. So maybe, Wayne, you could explain what kind of your sense from the committee was today and what are the next steps? Where is it going now?
Okay, well, I think I was saying to you earlier, I mean, I've been at this for quite some time and involved either on the periphery of those kind of committee meetings or or speaking at them myself, as Rebecca would have been over the last number of years. And it's been one of the most positive experiences I've had in a committee meeting, both in really impressed with the quality of the questioning, really impressed by how supportive people were behind the motions. I mean, as you say, the Green Party, Fianna Fáil, a couple of the Fine Gael people had questions around our wording, but were broadly supportive, and supportive of what we're trying to achieve. And of course, you know, Sinn Féin have a long history of supporting this, as the Soc Dems and the Greens, etc. So, but it's the first time in a committee meeting that we've really had that kind of cross-party support for it. And the last action of the committee that was agreed was that the committee will write to the minister and ask him to engage with Home for Good, and ask him also to set out what the ambition of the government is in delivering on this, on the referendum. And I see one of the Fianna Fáil senators has put out a note following the meeting, saying that she'll be working with the minister to make sure that in the coming months we'll have an amendment that could be put to the people, because we don't know entirely when we can have the vote because of all the COVID. Obviously, we want the vote as soon as we can, but we want it to be done safely, and you know, COVID is a huge barrier to that at the moment. But what we also want is really within the next 6 months, we should see a wording coming out that we know when the opportunity arises to have a referendum, that we can have it and we know what the wording is. And I think that's a timeline that the committee seemed to be very willing to work to. But certainly they were writing to the minister outlining what their feelings on our wording was, on the feelings on the having the referendum is, and asking the minister to engage with us. And that's a really positive outcome.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. Rebecca, what's your kind of assessment of it, and where do you think we need to go?
I mean, I think it was a really kind of positive day. I was really struck by how so many people articulated really clearly and really kind of compassionately how fundamental the protection of housing is for people, and how, you know, you can't participate meaningfully in society if you don't have somewhere to stay. And, you know, Fianna Fáil deputies, Fine Gael deputies all agreeing that everybody needs a home, and the, you know, people agreeing and coalescing around the need to protect this as a fundamental right. So I thought that was really, you know, that is the basis on which we need to we need to take this. And I think if we look at the progression of this issue, Deputy O'Brien made the point that this is the fifth time the right to housing has been considered by the Rochester Committee on Housing in its various formulations as committee. The special committee did as well. But we're in a really different place now. You know, we have the commitment to the program for government of June of this year, and now we have it firmly on people's agendas. So the job for us now is to keep that impetus going and to see this through, as Wayne said, in the next kind of six-month period, and to just be engaging and to be discussing and to make sure we can arrive at the right formulation of wording so that we can go out and campaign on this.
Yeah, I think that you're right, that it is about the wording is important to hold on to that, I think, and it will be interesting to see how that progresses. I think politically that, you know, if we look at, there's no doubt that the general election had an impact. I think that clearly housing was one of the key electoral issues, and within that there was a very clear, you know, articulation for a demand for the right to housing. And it was raised, I know, with people on the Doors. Obviously, it was a key issue for the Green Party. And it seems to me that, you know, there is that was a change in that committee from, you know, a year ago, for example, in terms of there was much more questioning of even the notion of the right to housing. And, you know, does that exist? And is that something that's real or reasonable? And so I think it is. It marked a really significant step. And I think the question is as well then how, you know, it is the going to the Minister for Housing. The question as well then is, you know, how does it progress in terms of that wording? Does it stay with a committee? Is there a need for a convention on it? And obviously I would have thought that we've had the convention was held in 2014, and therefore there's not a need for a convention, that really it is the case now of just progressing the wording into a referendum. Would that be your understanding, Rebecca, or what do you think?
Well, I mean, I think what is valuable about the meeting is that the committee is going to write to the minister and let him know that they've heard from us and what Home for Good said before the committee, and then invite him to meet with us and to meet with his officials in his department, because ultimately they will be the ones examining potential formulations of wording. So we would really welcome the opportunity to discuss our formulation and to see what comments and they have on that, and to feed into that process. But it will be ultimately, it'll be a process that will happen within government. So we just want to open out that conversation and to give it impetus. Wayne may have something to add on that.
No, I think I'd agree with that. I mean, that will be I agree with you that there isn't a need for another constitutional convention. The constitutional convention went through quite an in-depth process. A really important process as well. I mean, those kind of, I think a lot of us perhaps were a bit skeptical at the start of that process, and we were proved wrong. We were repeatedly proved wrong, because some of the other issues they looked at, where there was very strong consensus, everyone thought that it was far too radical what was being proposed. And actually the Irish public completely supported the more radical. And interestingly, the Oireachtas, when they set out and did the deliberative process, came to the same conclusions as the citizens' assemblies and the constitutional conventions. So I think that process has been done. And Rebecca's right. The next stage is it'll be cabinet that signs off on a referendum, on the wording of referendum. So we need to see those conversations. And based on the quality of the discussion we had today, the quality of the questioning, some of it was challenging. I'm not sure that it needs to go much further than the Housing Committee. Outside of the minister will need his process as well, and he'll have his advisors, and there's a process there. And I'm sure there are other people in the Oireachtas who, particularly those with a legal background, who could make a valuable contribution. So whether it's a special committee off the Housing Committee or whether it's the Housing Committee itself, just to make sure we air all the issues. But I think it can be a very short-term process, and we can come to a formation of wordings very quickly.
Mm. And I think you're right, absolutely. And the impetus is to move on this, because there is obviously clearly, a public demand for change and a public, I think, appetite and interest and engagement. Obviously, we have to wait in terms of COVID. But I do think as well that, you know, if we look at the evidence, and we know from ourselves, you know, there's huge inertia, and, you know, things take time to move, you know, referendums, and that there's also likely, we know that there is going to be disagreement, you know, from certain sectors within society and even within political parties, you know, opposition to this, that there will be a need to have a public engagement and civil society engagement to keep the pressure on to actually hold the referendum and then to win that referendum. That, you know, Home for Good now, you know, has brought together a coalition, but, you know, how do you think we go on to the next steps, or we obviously need to, but there is, do you agree that there is a challenge then how we move that to broadening out to get the public to be engaged in this now? Rebecca.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got the first part of this, in that we are now kind of on the agenda and we're in the programme for government. The second stage is to get the referendum and get that in the pipeline. The third stage is to win the referendum. So as a coalition, we're obviously discussing that and we'll be reaching out and engaging with civil society and getting the messaging. And I suppose the other aspect of the committee meeting today was getting that engagement from the members, getting that clear understanding of the issues and the challenges, so they too can articulate this on the doorsteps when it comes to them being in a position to sell it, because that is, you know, that's an important aspect of this. And, you know, Wayne is a policy communications person, and we'll have some ideas about how we do that winning bit.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, but the point has been made that it's not politicians that win referendums, it's the civil society groups particularly, and the way they articulate and voice that. But what do you think, Wayne, kind of will be our key challenges now around that?
It'll be about getting the language right. It'll be about making sure we're communicating clearly to people the benefits of this. We're still kind of, as a group, I think, in a slightly technical language phase. We haven't got our slogans yet, those kind of things. And that sounds a bit facetious, but it's really important
that people have
something they can catch hold of. I think what's been another advantage of today, coming out of it, there's a sense of momentum now. There is a sense of actually political will to do this. Certainly within, you know, within the committee there was, and that will have a force and effect. And I think as well, as a group, I think we've been a bit slow to really broaden out the coalition of Home for Good, not because we didn't want people in, but rather we weren't as clear about what we were asking of them. Mm-hmm. We weren't as clear about where the momentum was, and we were kind of plugging away at this and doing it as individuals and as a group. And now there really does feel like there's a bit of a swell of ambition around it, a bit of a swell of movement. And that is something that I think people who we have natural allies, who I think will now see, or we can more confidently go to them and say, come and work with us on this. We need your contribution, because you're right. It's going to need a much broader coalition than the one we currently have. I think we've done a huge amount of work, and my colleagues in Home for Good deserve a huge amount of credit for that. But now we have to move on and build a momentum. And I think engaging things like, somebody today made the point that there's, you know, there's students in NUIG, in TCD, in UCD, who are now can maybe see there's some excitement behind this and will want to know more about it and hopefully start to get involved, that we can start to really build that kind of grassroots movement that, you're right, will be needed. I would say we do need the political campaigners on side as well. They will make a huge contribution in this, because I think there will be about mobilizing the sort of people who get out and campaign during campaigns, and political parties have access to them. So I think it's a broad social movement we need, and you know, political parties are definitely be included in that.
Yeah, no, I think that sums it up quite well in terms of that. I think that sense of ambition. The last word, Rebecca, what's your sense of what's needed now? And I think it's interesting, I was thinking earlier around the whole notion of, you know, how, because I have to say I was excited by the committee. It's amazing, isn't it, to get excited by a housing committee. But it was, I felt there was a real sense of you know, wow, this is actually moving, and something we've been talking about for years, and, you know, had our planning meetings and our drudgery meetings and our value statements and our assessments of, you know, where do we think we should go with it, and, you know, that really to see it practically going out there and, you know, you putting it across so well, but also just the way we've got to it now in terms of formulating. And I think it is really, to me, it's seemed, yes, this is something I think can really, really win. And because of the substance to it, and the sense of where people are at. And I was just thinking of, you know, the generations, for example, who are mobilizing around, you know, the mother and baby homes, who've mobilized around repeal, who've mobilized, you know, you've seen them take back the city, that there's a generation who are, and often Una Mullally is one of the people who I think articulates it quite well, you know, are really hungry for a kind of change in Ireland, you know, that change. And we've seen such change. That, and the idea of the conversations, that it happens through conversations at the dinner table. And I was just thinking of, you know, from the committee today, you could see how this could be brought into people's homes and talked about, you know, that why we need this. And, you know, I just felt, yeah, this, we can win this, and we're going to win this. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm totally with you, Rory. Yeah, when you said that it was, you're checking back your emails and, you know, that meeting 3 years ago, you know, we've been in this sort of tight-knit coalition for, you know, a number of years doing this preparatory work. But now we're at the point where it is time to broaden out, and it would be, you know, we need people to get on board. We need to be working in partnership. We need to be supporting people to be able to articulate this argument, to be campaigning on it and developing our messaging, all those things that Wayne mapped out there, and to learn lessons from other successful campaigns and to see how we can use those, which we've done a little bit of thinking on as well. And certainly we have a wave of change. It's absolutely stunning, the changes that have happened in Ireland over the last 10 years. And this isn't even a radical juncture. You know, we've already discussed that. But it is, I think, much more within grasp than it was 6 months ago. So it's about taking that and moving it forward.
Great. Wayne Stanley, Rebecca Keating, thanks a million for joining me today on Reboot Republic, for a very, very hopeful Reboot Republic that will, as we're setting it out here, we're going to achieve a right to housing in the constitution and major change in this country around that and support for people. So if you are interested in finding out more, the Home for Good website is there. You can check it out and read the different reports are there. You can look at the Housing Committee or Oireachtas. You can also read my book Housing Shock as well, which has a big chapter dedicated to the right to housing in it. But also check out Simon Community's Mercy Law, Threshold Focus, and the others who are involved. So thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you soon.